Okay, so we have one homework assignment. Right? For two of the boys and three of the girls. To learn one Bhagavad Gita verse. Which of the boys that said they would learn this verse? There's one. Where's the other? Didn't come. That's boy. Okay. Are you ready? Go ahead. And on the girls' side, which were the girls that said that they would learn? One, two. Where's the other one? She stayed home. Okay, go ahead. Oh, you've learned the translation too. Go ahead. Can you match those two stalwart students? Go ahead, try. Too, because she was saying it while you were saying it. Do you know the verse? Go ahead. Were you here yesterday? How did you know to learn this verse? You heard it? They gave you, just go ahead. Very good, thank you. Okay. Let's see what comes up tonight. See if we get some other verses and some other volunteers. Usually when you say something like that, the kids get, I think I have to leave now. Okay. So that verse was connected to the verse that we were speaking yesterday evening, where text number 8, the occupational duties that a man performs according to his own position are only so much useless labor if they do not provoke attraction for the message of the personality of God. And so all other duties are subordinate to this one duty. Just like the chandeliers, sometimes they have really big ones. And all this big massive thing is all suspended from one place up there. It doesn't mean throw away the chandelier, just the place that fastens the chandelier, that's only important. But the place that fastens the chandelier suspends or supports the whole chandelier. Like that. This one principle is the basis and support of all other principles of religion. Without that basis and support, it's useless. Lie on the floor, or off in the corner, or put in your closet, but it's not going to be beautiful, nor will it do what it's supposed to do, give light. Because this one principle is the essence and support of all other principles of Dharma. And then, this morning, we discussed text number 9. Who was there for the class this morning for text number 9? Okay. We'll do a little summary with the help of the audience members who attended. The next verse says, when you do your dharma, you do your religious duty, what should be the purpose behind the motivating force or purpose behind that religious duty? What's the Sanskrit word? Upavarga, or liberation. You've heard this from lectures before, from the Sanskrit alphabet. Upavarga is pa, pa, ba, pa, ma. You've heard Prabhupada explain. Pa means ma, ma. So, when you're learning your alphabet, like we go A, B, C, D, so they have their pa, pa, ba, pa, ma. That's their one of the letters of the alphabet. And each of them indicate parishrama, the pain of fruitive activity. And then apavarga is freedom from that. So liberation. So when you're doing your prescribed duties of life, your unique, they're collective and there's very personal duties that we each have, that should be the aim. Upavarga, liberation. Dharmasya, yapavargasya, narto kayopakalpate. It should never be done for just simply for economic development or material gain. It should never be done for that purpose. Religious duty should not be done in that way. Oh, I'll go to the church, mosque, synagogue, or temple, and I'll get some piety. And if I get some piety, then I'll prosper. And I certainly want to prosper, and so I'll do my religious duties because I want to prosper. No, not for prosperity's sake, for ultimate liberation's sake. And then what was the second half? Who can recall? This morning's class? It was, if you're doing your duties for that higher purpose, and something does come, because when you do virtuous activities, you get a good result. And when the good result comes your way, it shouldn't be, oh, it must be that Krishna wants me to enjoy this something. I must be obedient to Krishna. Surely he wants me to enjoy because he gave all this wonderful facility. Let me enjoy. No. So we were using this example on both the entry end and the result end. And in between, one's purpose should be to satisfy Krishna. And in the satisfying of Krishna, provoke or awaken attraction for hearing the topics of Krishna. So there's a few other verses, but I'm going to skip ahead to one that connects with these two. It's text 14. Tasmat ekena manasa. Tasmat is therefore. So when you hear the word tasmat, it's so many things are said and said and said, and this is like the summation or conclusion of them. Therefore, ekena manasa. Eka means one. Manasa, mind. The mind should be singular in focus. Just like sarvadharmam puritya mam ekam. Surrender to me alone. ekena manasa, tasmat ekena manasa, Bhagavan. The mind should be exclusively fixed upon Bhagavan. Tasmat ekena manasa, Bhagavan. Satvatam. Satvatam. Satvatam is those who are devotees. Satvatas, those who are abiding in the quality of truth. That's what devotees are supposed to be doing. What devotees do, they abide in sat, that which is eternal. Eternal reality. Tasmat ekena manasa bhagavan satvatam patihi. Patihi. Krishna is the patihi, he's the protector of those who surrender unto him. Right? Sarvadharmam pratyaja mamekam shanam praja. That's what we do, and then Krishna, aham tvam sarvapapevyo. Krishna, aham, unto those persons, tvam sarvapapevyo. I relieve them of all their problems. He's the protector. He protects us from the implication in material activities and the reactions to material activities. He protects us from material life. In the when Narada met with the the 10,000 sons, the Hariyashvas, the sons of Daksha, he was describing in metaphorical language a very mysterious place. He said, you're just young boys. Your father has given you some service, and you think you understand what that service is, but you don't understand what that service is. And let me describe what that service is. There's this place where, having gone, you don't come back. And to enter that place, there's a hole. And on the other side of the hole, there's this river that flows backwards. And there's this machine with many blades, and it's always turning and rips apart anyone who goes there. So the metaphorical language, they understood because their consciousness was pure. They could understand each of the examples that he was giving. And there's a one person who lives there. And there's a one woman who lives there. And there's this machine. So the machine that this has many blades revolving and rips apart anything it comes in contact with. It's fruit of activities. Have you ever noticed that when you try to be an enjoyer in the material world, this very unpleasant experience happens instead? And it doesn't stop. Fruit of activities. Well, karma is very invincible and binding. But one can become free from that invincible and binding law of karma by remembrance of Krishna. Our process of remembering Krishna begins with chanting his holy name. Very naturally, because we have a relationship with Krishna, but we've forgotten that relationship with Krishna. We hear his holy name because the name of Krishna is not different than Krishna, then it brings remembrance. Like a patient that has amnesia, they can't remember who they are, where they came from, who their family members are, even if they're before them, they can't remember. The whole system has been shocked with trauma and they can't even remember. So slowly little messages help people remember that amnesia. We have an eternal relationship with Krishna. By hearing Krishna's name, it helps awaken that relationship. So hearing Krishna's name, and side by side with hearing Krishna's name, hearing the topics about Krishna, the Bhagavatam, it awakens our dormant consciousness. So therefore, Shrotavya Kirti Tavyasya Dyeya Pujasya Nityada. It gives four things. In this verse, in the second chapter of the first canto, finds its refrain. It's like, I don't know so much about music, but there's something about classical music that says, I was in an orchestra for a while, there's a series of notes that sometimes the bass instruments, boom, 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 and then the high-pitched instruments, boom, 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 boom. And then they do them together, and then, you know, that it plays its strain throughout the musical score. It goes off and comes back. It's creating different moods, and with the music it creates a feeling in the audience. Sometimes it's accompanied by music, or by voice, or it's the background of some other drama. Boom, 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 boom. So the Bhagavatam is like that. There are certain phrases in the Bhagavatam. This is just my little non-professional appreciation of the poetry of the Bhagavatam. There's phrases that repeat themselves, and when you hear those phrases repeated, it brings a whole big message. Just like Prabhupada would sometimes repeat certain phrases from a verse. Like Prahlad Maharaj, that education, Kumara Acharet Pragyo Dharmam Bhagavatami Ha. So he wouldn't even have to say the whole, that's just half of the thing. But when he would say the thing, and say the thing, and say, and you're accustomed to hearing Prabhupada speak, it has this volumes of meaning. Even you don't even know what the syllables mean. Because he connects it to this strong message. The very beginning of childhood, Komara, the Komara age. There's a Bala age and Komara age, and Poganda age and Kishore age. So this age when Krishna just begins herding the cows, that's his Komara age. Or when boys begin going to school, because he was in the cowherd community, he didn't go to school. Hey, those of you that don't like school, just go live with Vrindavan with Krishna. He didn't go to school. He just went out and heard to the cows, the cow boys. Because otherwise you go to school at 5 years, get Kumara age. So when Kumara age comes, Dhaman Bhagavatam Iha, that one should learn this Bhagavad Dharma, the glories of the personality of Godhead, at the tender age of childhood. And then it describes what that process of education is. In the verse by Prahlad. So, the Bhagavatam has such phrases, and this is one. Shrotavya Kirti Tavyascha Jaya Pujasya Nityada. Sometimes the language is slightly varied, but it, it carries its import. There's hearing and there's chanting. So many times Prabhupada would say, everyone is hearing and chanting. Even the birds get up in the morning and they're singing. Where is food? Where is food? And the roosters get up in the morning and right over here. They make their rooster sound. It's morning, wake up. Where is food? And the man turns on his radio and looks at his newspaper. What's the price of rice today? Who did it to who? They're hearing and chanting something. So the transcendentalist is hearing and chanting something, but we get up in the morning and it's Samsara Dava Naradina Loka. We're singing songs in praise of the spiritual master and the Hare Krishna mantra. Because it's in relation to Bhagavan. So, Shrotavya Kirti Tavyasya Dhyaya. What does Dhyaya mean? Like Dhyana. Meditation. Chapter 6, Bhagavad Gita is Dhyana Yoga. So, Dhyaya. What you fix your mind upon. Hear, chant, Dhyaya and puja, you worship. The materialist has another kind of hearing, chanting, remembering, and worshiping. I had this, because of my lifestyle, my life as a sannyasi, I don't have the good fortune of associating with materialists intimately, or ill fortune, except when I travel. When I travel, I get to see what their habits are. Remember one time, this is just specific remembrance, I was in Chicago and I was heading for New York, I think, and in Chicago the weather changes intensely, like radically. So we all boarded the plane, and I was sitting next to a Jewish man and his Jewish wife. And he was absorbed in stocks and bonds and the stock market. So the door closed, and they said, there's this big storm coming, so we're going to go out on the runway and wait to take off, because if we stay here at the gate, we'll lose our spot in line. So we're going to go out and just sit at the... So you can use your cell phones. And but he saw there's this little telephone thing in the back of the seat in front of us, and pulled it out because it says what's going on with the stocks. And it was like a 5-minute delay from what's going on in the stock market, because he knew. So he asked his friend, you know, how's this stock doing? How's that stock doing? Buy 10 of those and sell 20 of those. And okay, now we have to take off. He was doing that. He was absorbed in it. I just did it. You know, it was for half an hour. Absorbed. Absorbed. Then as soon as the plane came down at the other end, what happened? You know, the... did the price go up? Did that one go down? And, you know, how much money do we make? And his wife's there, you know, enjoying the whole thing because her husband's making money for her. And, I mean, I can imagine what this man does when in his dreams he's in front of the board of the stock market thinking, how are they going to make some more money? Selling this and selling that. Just completely wired. This man should reach from a Bhagavatam. Dharma syanya pavar visionarato chayopa kalpate. Or tasmade kena manasa bhagavan satatam patihi. Where's the protection, the patihi, for this man when the stocks go down? He is smashed. And it goes up for a little bit, and he's happy again momentarily, and then it goes down again. Life's on like a little piece of wood in the middle of the ocean. Just sometimes it's up, and sometimes it's down, and sometimes it's up, and and there's no shelter. It's just out there in the ocean. Sometimes it's up, and sometimes it's down. Sometimes it's calm, and sometimes it's stormy. And whatever's going on, that's what's going on. Just tossed around by the waves of material existence with no shelter, no sense of goal of life other than the next wave, and whether it's up or down. Very sad. Very sad. Here's Srila Prabhupada's purport. If realization of the absolute truth is the ultimate aim of life, because the previous verses are saying like that, Dharma is for that purpose. Not for the temporary things, it's for the eternal things. So if realization of the absolute truth is the ultimate aim of life, it must be carried out by all means. In any one of the above mentioned social orders or divisions of life, that's varnashrams. Mercy spoke of the varnashram, the various divisions of duty according to varna and ashram. And any of the above mentioned varnas or ashrams, the four processes, namely glorifying, hearing, remembering, and worshipping, are general occupations. Without these principles of life, no one can exist. Activities of a living being involve engagements in these four different principles of life, especially in modern society. All activities are more or less dependent on hearing and glorifying. Any man of any social status becomes well known in human society in a very short time if he simply is glorified, truly or falsely, in the daily newspapers. It's true. Some obscure nutcase person can all of a sudden become, you know, center of everybody's attention because the hearing and chanting newspapers put his name in the paper. Sometimes people just do bizarre things, you know, criminal things, so they get their name in the paper. They volunteer, "I did it." It turns out they didn't do it, but they wanted to became known because the hearing and chanting process of daily newspapers glorified them. Sometimes political leaders of a particular party are also advertised by newspaper propaganda, and by such a method of glorification, an insignificant man becomes an important man within no time. By such propaganda, by false glorification of an unqualified person, cannot bring any good, either for the particular man or for society. There may be some temporary reactions to such propaganda, but there is no permanent effects. Therefore, such activities are a waste of time. The actual object of glorification is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has created everything manifested before us. We have broadly discussed this fact from the beginning of Janmadhyasya Sloka of this Bhagavatam. The tendency to glorify others or hear must be turned to the real object of glorification, the Supreme Being, and that will bring happiness. Boys? Boys will be boys, what can you do? So the Srimad Bhagavatam is providing us with a rich resource of subject matter in relation to Personality of Godhead. That's why it's called Bhagavat Purana, because it's Purana is historical narrations in relation to Krishna and Krishna's dear devotees. So when Krishna's dear devotees and Krishna are being glorified, it brings that subject matter which draws the constitutional, natural energy of the soul to the position of wanting to serve Him. So it's like our activity is aimed at attraction of the topics of Krishna, and the topics of Krishna aim is so that all our activities are drawn to Him. Like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, always engage in your prescribed duties and always think of Me. A remember, I think I can share this. Devamrita Swami, when he was a new devotee living in the Brooklyn Temple, like all of us, we all were engaged in book distribution and Sankirtan activity. Remember, we had this memorable conversation when he was saying, when I'm going on Sankirtan, I'm trying to put it together, how to remember Krishna while doing my activities. Because it's easy to put my mind in my activities or to try to think of Krishna, but how do you put the two things together? Right? Or someone asked a similar question, Maharaj, I don't get it. What? I get Krishna consciousness up to the point where I sit in front of my computer in the office. And then I just, you know, forget Krishna until 5 o'clock. And then I think of Krishna. You know, but what happened? It's Krishna. Get up in the morning. It's Krishna and Krishna and Krishna and Krishna and Krishna and Krishna. And then zone out and then Krishna. I don't get it. How to think of Krishna? Because how can I think of Krishna while I'm solving a problem on my computer? Or I'm doing some practical activity of life? Because this verse is saying, Jaya Pujascha Nityada, in all circumstances of life. So, are you supposed to, you can't be in your office saying, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Did you get your job done yet? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. We can be chanting, hearing. So how do we accomplish this? So it's not, I was listening to Prabhupada just today in a lecture he was describing that when you have feelings of love for someone, automatically you think of that someone. You don't have to do something separate. Here's the classic example. Young boy, young girl, they're in love. The teacher doesn't have to say, look out the window and daydream about your boyfriend, girlfriend. The teacher doesn't have to instruct like that. They're doing that. When you're brushing your teeth and when you're walking to school and when you're in the classroom and you're eating your meal and you're taking your shower and you're going to bed and whatever you're doing, you know, he's thinking of her and she's thinking of him because they're attached to one another. It's not, you have to do something separate. Where there's, so this is immediately connected to the chant, because we have a natural love for Krishna, it's already there. By chanting his name and by hearing about him, our attraction for him is awakened, like this amnesia example. And when, so the combining, in the beginning, it's vidhi, sadhana, bhakti. We practice rising early, attending Mangal Arati, chant the holy name, worship the deity, make our offerings to the deity, take the remnants of prasad, hear the scripture. We do these things as a regulation. But that regulation just awakens something that's natural within. Like in ancient Vedic culture, there was this practice that young boys, and it happened even at Krishna's time, young boys and young girls were married before they even knew what boys and girls were about. So that when they grew up, they would know who's my husband, who's my wife. Here's how it worked. On the day of the boy's birthday, the girl's parents, they would be separate. They live with their family. But they had a little ceremony. They're married. So on the boy's birthday, the girl would bring something to the boy. Here's a, whatever it is, pie, a cake, or a something. And she would be trained, you serve your husband. And he would be trained, oh, how nice she's remembering me on my birthday. And then on her birthday, something. And so they would grow up like this, not even knowing what it's all about. But they would become accustomed to receiving, you know, this loving exchange of receiving and accepting. And so when the light goes on, oh, this is what it's all about. They know that there's some attachment already. And their mind doesn't go somewhere else. And this is where people are civilized and cultured, and their mind doesn't go somewhere else. But they're trained like that, even before there's a sense of what it means. So we're also a little bit like, we don't have really a sense of what is it like to be with Krishna. Someone over this past weekend was saying, you know, sometimes I sit and I wonder what it would be like to be with Krishna, and I come up with different things. But we can't imagine what that is. We're not recommended to imagine what that is. We hear from the description of Krishna's pastimes what that is. And the one problem is our tendency is to measure what that is from our own experience. But we're recommended, don't measure what that is. Think of it as beyond our experience. When Krishna plays with the cowherd boys, it's not like little boys playing with one another. Although it may look like it, it's a transcendental loving exchange. As much as Krishna's lifting Govardhan Hill with the little finger of his left hand is a transcendental behavior that little boys can't do. The other activities of Book Ordinary are also loving exchanges. It's entirely on the platform of pure transcendental love. So we can't compare our activities to Krishna's activities. But if we hear about them and hear about them and hear about them, we're like the little boy and little girl at 5 years old married and don't even know what that means. We're engaged in the very same activities, hearing about Krishna, that goes on in the spiritual world. Same with deity worship. Exactly as there's so many pastimes where Krishna is decorating Srimati Radharani. There's several places in Kusum Sarovar. Any of you who have been to Vrindavan have surely been to Govardhan Hill. And one of the places at Govardhan Hill is Kusum Sarovar. And there's a wonderful pastime that established that Sarovar, that lake. That involved a pastime where Krishna decorates Srimati Radharani. Or on the Prakrama Mark, just by Imli Tal, where Krishna, when Radha left the Rasa dance, one time Krishna left the Rasa dance, another time Radha left the Rasa dance, knowing that Krishna wanted to be with her. When Radha left the Rasa dance, Krishna left the Rasa dance. There's no Rasa without Radha. And he was searching and searching and searching. And he couldn't find her. So he sat down by the river Jamuna, under a tal tree, like tal fruit, like talamar, like a certain tropical tree, and thinking so intensely of Radharani, his blackish complexion became golden. Just immersed in thought of Radha. And Radha came and saw Krishna looking in his golden feature. And she was amazed. And she asked Krishna, "What is this that I'm seeing? Your form is blackish, but you're golden in complexion." He said, "It is in thinking in separation of you, my complexion has become golden." And he disclosed to her in the next yuga, because of the same mood of enjoying love and separation from you, I will appear in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So very near, in that same place, Lord Chaitanya would come as Krishna, but he was golden in complexion, and in the mood of separation from Krishna, he would sit and chant, and sometimes manifest the complexion was blackish. The place has such sacred significance that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur instructed his disciples to purchase that plot of land and establish a temple of Radha and Krishna. And now there's a temple of Radha and Krishna at that place. So very near that place is another pastime place where Krishna finding Radha, finding he found Radha another time when Radha had left. And he, out of his intense love for Radha, he decorated her, just like one engages in deity worship, with various ornaments and beautiful garland and fragrances of oil, scented oils and chandan, and a beautiful crown. That pastime place is right by the Parikrama Mark. So Krishna performs such pastimes, and sometimes the gopis, they decorate Radha, and sometimes Radha decorates Krishna. So those are pastimes that are performed in the spiritual realm, and we're practicing over here. We're decorating Krishna Balaram in Gaudatai. And at a very advanced stage of Krishna consciousness, those activities are performed spontaneously. We're not on that level, we're on the vidhi, regulation level. But all the activities, the singing and dancing and that we have in kirtan, these are the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, and they are meant for persons of this age of Kali that help bring us to the platform of love for Krishna and the spiritual world. That's not a pastime of the spiritual world. Hope you'll be alright. So that's our goal, and our practice should be with great attention. I spent the whole Christmas holiday, like three classes a day, drilling deeply on this topic of the quality chanting, the kind of chanting done with quality such that it brings about a transformation of heart, not just hearing and chanting done such that the hardness of heart, the material attractions that we have change, and the attraction for Krishna awakens. That subject is an expansion of this verse. Tasmat ekena manasa bhagavan satyakam patihi shrotavya kirtitavyascha dhyaya pujascha nityada. Nityada. This is our activity. the teachings of Lord Chaitanya spring from these verses of the Bhagavatam. This is the, say it the other way around, this is the scriptural foundation of what we do in Krishna consciousness. When some persons see the devotees singing and dancing and having a wonderful festival on our Sunday programs, they wonder, wow, I've never seen anything like this before. But it's a natural expression of the joyfulness of the soul in relation to Krishna, following the example of Lord Chaitanya. And it's so natural. Anyone can take part that doesn't even understand. They feel joy. Little children, they may not understand deeply what's going on, but it's natural. I'm sure you have some children in your community. As soon as kirtan starts, they're dancing. It's just natural. And in the mature stage, the understanding along with purity awaken, so that we're chanting with consciousness of Krishna, chanting, hearing, remembering, and worshipping in Krishna consciousness. That's our objective. Okay, so any discussion on these verses? Yes.
Maharaj, you were saying something about the art of transformation of the heart.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can speak a little more.
Okay. I will. What inspired the discussing this topic was a passage from commentary of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, when he was discussing this topic. And he started with saying that we need to know what is the goal of our religious life, our goal of our life. And the goal, he declared, is to directly see Krishna. Speaks of fix the mind on Krishna. But that means seeing Krishna. So that's our goal. I mean, being in a relationship with Krishna. Not just in an abstract way, meditating on something that's vague. Actually being in a relationship with Krishna, then we can have the mind always absorbed in Him. But then he says, to get there, I'm paraphrasing, but to get there, this process of hearing is provided. And if we hear from a qualified person, bona fide spiritual master is the translation that's given. We hear from a bona fide spiritual master with that eagerness. To reach the goal. We're way over here, but the goal is maybe far away, but I want to reach the goal, an eagerness to reach the goal, that experience of our relationship with Krishna. When we hear such messages about Krishna, who is Krishna, how to reach Krishna, qualities of Krishna, form of Krishna, whatever the topic is, but in relation to Krishna, with some eagerness, he recommends one should take that message within one's heart and two qualities with gratitude, appreciate the message, the source of the deliverer of the message, the person who's the object of that message, some feelings of gratitude towards all of that, and contemplate very carefully how to understand, because we have material conceptions and this is not material conception, it's Krishna. how to what is the actual message that we're receiving, and then how to live according to that message. When that mood of service, of how to bring this message into our lives in practical ways, into the world of action, that mood of service, that quality of hearing, transforms the heart. Material conceptions are dismissed, coverings of contamination are eliminated, and then one can, with great concentration and determination, keep one's mind fixed on Krishna. So, in the beginning stages of Krishna consciousness, that deep concentration, great determination, clarity doesn't exist. We're struggling. So, the change of heart comes from the quality of our chanting, our hearing and chanting. And those qualities he described. But this is one can explore that topic further and further. As I said, I spent like 4 days on that topic. That's a quick summary.
It requires speed, so I'm just wondering if you can just explain your activity. We have to get so that we can.
Every one of us, just to take up devotional service, there's some preliminary faith. You've asked the right question, because the operative principle is faith that grows in stages. And the first is some preliminary faith that says, there's another reality besides this, the everyday stuff that goes on. Behind the veneer, there's something of more, of greater substance. What is that greater substance? I have some faith that it exists. So, then Krishna sends some saintly association. And we, sadhu sangha, we associate with saintly persons. Then in the process of associating with saintly persons, we engage in activities with those saintly persons. We do what sadhus do with them. Bhajana Kriya. We're engaged in our practices of devotion. Now, what should be happening in that transition is this preliminary faith matures to some kind of action, and then the some kind of action needs to mature into a qualitative performance of that same essential inquisitive spirit, nurturing our desire to experience that which is beyond the veneer, that which is not just this everyday stuff. The really real thing, you know, the whatever that is. So, and we learn it's Krishna, the personality of Godhead. So our hearing and chanting activities should be done, just like the verse that we read this morning, with that spirit. I want to reach Krishna. That's this upavara vasya. It's easy to get lost in the temporary stuff that's happening all around us. It's too easy. It's pushing on us, pulling on us, tugging on our attention. And we have to have a stronger desire than that pushing, pulling, tugging to experience our relationship with Krishna. There's a faith that has now matured from our hearing and chanting process. And the activities of devotion that we do connected with hearing and chanting. And it continues to grow through the anartha vritti stage and carefully guiding, receiving careful guidance on how to do our occupational duties, using the language of the Bhagavatam here, and you know how to lead our worldly life in such a way that it has a suitable environment for growing further in Krishna consciousness, in the internal aspect of our Krishna consciousness, this experiencing Krishna. Then we receive messages that tell us, and the potency is there in those messages. Doing so now is the question of faith. How much faith do we have that that reality actually exists, and we can enter that reality, that these persons are in touch with that reality, and they can share that reality with us? Commensurate with our faith, we hear with commensurate attentiveness. So it's a gradual, ever unfolding of faith. According to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, prema bhakti is nothing but a stage of faith. In fact, all the different stages of devotional service are but unfolding and maturing of faith. The seed is faith, this preliminary faith. Carefully nurtured grows into love of God at each successive stage. And each one of us are at different stages. But the process is the same. Our experience internally is going to be something different. So in larger assemblies like this, we have, you know, all stages, so many varieties of stages of persons practicing Krishna consciousness. So we can present just, you know, the basic principles. Then it's up to each one of us, according to our faith, to go further, go more deeply. It's up to us. And the opportunity, the potency is embedded within the messages. We all have the same books. And according, as you raised the question, according to our faith, according to our advancement in Krishna consciousness, we'll hear and experience differently. The whole of the spiritual world is available. There's a verse at the end of chapter 3 of this first canto that says, if one hears with rapt attention, this Tasmat Ekena Manasa is our verse this evening. Nivishta is the word in 1344. If one hears with Nivishta, rapt attention, this is a quality, a stage of faith, then one will see the personality of God in every page of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Wow. I don't see Krishna in every page of the Srimad Bhagavatam. But those that have this rapt attention do. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw Lord Jagannath, he saw Krishna standing holding a flute. And he ran towards Krishna. At last I found my Lord. And he was in such ecstasy he fell to the ground unconscious. When he saw Chatak Parvat, the sand dune, he saw Krishna in the form of Govardhan Hill. When he saw Govardhan Hill, he saw Krishna. He embraced the rock of Govardhan as if a lover embracing beloved. So these are higher stages of Krishna consciousness. But they're not imaginary. They're advanced stages of Krishna consciousness. Once Prabhupada was asked by a reporter, Swamiji, have you seen Krishna? And Prabhupada's reply was, if I told you, would you believe me? And the reporter said, yes, I'll believe you. And Prabhupada then said, Not only I am seeing Krishna, but I am seeing him all the time. Now, do you believe me? Oh yes, Swamiji, whatever you say. You know, how does he understand what that means? How do we understand what that means? But Krishna and Krishna's name are none different. We're associating with Krishna's name 25,000 times a day. Minimum. When we chant our 16 rounds. So, what's our faith in the non-difference of Krishna and his holy name? We have some faith to keep up our chanting. We have some experience commensurate with that faith. And Krishna discloses himself proportionate to our surrender to him and our faith in him. So this is a very important question. Is a very important question, and it's a very important feature of our lives to consider. We nurture that faith through the association of devotees, and like we're doing right now, this hearing and chanting activity. That's what we're here for. Parama, something.
I'm just thinking the goal of our practice, our writing practice, like to begin with Swatha faith and increasing these to Sadhana, ultimately a chanting of what we're doing. The goal of the body to attain this spontaneous state, we must reach spontaneity.
That comes of its own accord. Just like a seed, when planted, it sprouts, and when it sprouts, the shoot comes up. The shoot comes out, the leaves come, and after leaves come, then more leaves, and after some time, some flowers, and after some flowers, some fruits. But it comes in natural sequence. We're not.
My question is: should we be in anxiety, or should we endeavor for that, or it just comes?
It comes of its own accord, but there should be some hankering for the object, Krishna, a relationship with Krishna, to be again connected to Krishna. There's the connection that disconnected. But we should want to be connected. So we're connected through the medium of devotional service, which we're doing. So we want to enhance that connection. We want to please Krishna. That makes the connection stronger. We should want to come before Krishna, and Krishna will smile. That's what we should want. And it's not just do our devotional service and somehow it's just going to happen. That somehow is some attraction for Krishna awakens. It's not Krishna. Devotional service is not like a vending machine. We just stand before the vending machine of devotional service, put in our coins, pull the lever, and down comes Krishna Bhakti, Prema Bhakti. It's not like that. It's not a mechanical process. It's a devotional process. Our love and our attraction, our attachment and our hankering for Krishna and pleasing Krishna must grow. Yes. Yes. Here's what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur taught, which Prabhupada also taught, which Bhaktivinoda Thakur also taught. Largely, along with the Vaidhi practices, is this extending of the mercy for us to act as instruments of extending the mercy. So preaching, we say, our ISKCON vernacular is preaching Krishna consciousness. But more to the essence is the mercy of Mahaprabhu wanting to give to the world love of God, act as conduits for that. Combine our Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti with that mood of giving Krishna consciousness to the world, to others. Although what is our qualification? But Lord Chaitanya's order is there, so it's not numerical, it's not quantitative, it's the spirit, it's the mood of munificence. Transforms the Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti into Radha. A spontaneous attraction for Krishna. The object of devotional service. Spontaneous attraction for the object of devotional service awakens with a combination of those two things. This is the mystery of Mahaprabhu's mission. So, Prabhupada didn't drill down or explore or, emphasize that part so much. But Bhakti Siddhanta, being Bhakti Siddhanta, he did. Because he had disciples who were going away from, the missionary work of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and, mixing with the Babajis in different places. To some extent that happened during Prabhupada's time too. To some extent that's happening today too. But the same warning is there. The spontaneous stage comes through that's Lord Chaitanya's gift. And you take up the process of giving Lord Chaitanya's gift and you receive that gift. The love of God is on the spontaneous platform. We don't need to do something else. It will come, unfold in time. This is the mercy of Mahaprabhu. He came to give love of God on the topmost platform of the residence of Vrindavan. That's Mahaprabhu. And this is the medium of how he gave it.
Hare Krishna. I'm reading. It's going to be a different Krishna consciousness. Once they chant in the
That's a nice book.
Yeah.
Nice message too.
Yeah. There are many others. I'm thinking, this question is kind of twofold.
Okay.
When you chant, attend them while you wait, must you focus on some form of Krishna? It is a one day form if you have to do you just chant Mahavir Mahindra
What, according to our very advanced acharya in the chanting of the holy name, that's Haridas Thakur, when chanting, where attention should go is to the sound form of the Lord. Sound also has form. Sound form of the Lord, Krishna. And when one's mind becomes absorbed in the sound vibration of Krishna's holy name, truly becomes absorbed within the mind without some extraneous or endeavor, the form of the Lord appears within the mind through sound. It's nama in sequence. Nama, Rupa. Nama means name. Rupa means form. Guna, the qualities of Krishna, and the lila, the pastimes of Krishna, appear within the mind. Within the heart, within your consciousness. So we have access to the pastimes of Krishna through the sound of Krishna's name. We have access to the form of Krishna through the sound of Krishna's name. The qualities of Krishna, the pastimes of Krishna. The doorway into that transcendental room, or the transcendental world, is through sound. The sound of His name. And to help guide our activities so that that hearing is done most effectively, we have our scriptures that tell us how to mold our life, to surround our life, to live in the everyday world in harmony with Krishna. So within that chamber of a pure lifestyle, it helps nurture and cultivate the mind going to Krishna's name, the sound of Krishna's name. So when chanting, that's where your mind should be directed towards. Hearing the sound vibration. And you feel something altogether different when hearing is very attentive to the sound of Krishna's name.
Is there any reason you don't submit that which you guys or giving up your consciousness or maybe your spirituality? Or if I want to retreat, how significant or important is it for you to help people with that?
I didn't catch the whole thing. Did you catch the whole thing?
He's asking how significant is it that you have to do 16 rounds?
Okay. What's the significance of 16? Just the principle of counting and the number of 16? You want to know what's the significance? Why do we count?
How significant? Okay, do you have to do it? Is it important?
It's important.
Complete the 16.
It's important.
If not,
why is it important? That's your question.
Yeah.
Okay. It's important in many ways. It's important in terms of establishing a vow, or vrata in Sanskrit, that as taught by our perfected souls, the acharyas who are beyond any need to do anything in any regulated manner, they are showing by their example that we help to fix our consciousness by making some commitment. From this side, the unregulated side, the contaminated side, I want to reach the goal. So I'll make a fixed commitment to Krishna. To reach the goal every day, I'm going to do something, and this much something. And as I can, I increase my commitment to do something. I can something further and something further and something further and something further. It helps us to become fixed by that vrata, that vow, that commitment. It's just like, let's just say, why take marriage vows? Just respect, the man and the woman respect one another, and they live together, and there's this common law marriage thing that goes on. So why does Scripture have a religious marriage as opposed to a common law marriage? It's a commitment. And before God, we make a commitment to one another. it's not the essence of the relationship. It helps cement the relationship. That firm commitment. That's the function of the vow. It helps us before we become fully in love with Krishna, fully attracted and attached to Krishna. It helps us get there. That regular. So in all circumstances of all living beings and everywhere at all times necessary? No. For most of us, yes. It helps us get there. And our perfected souls, they show by example, and our teaching is we follow the perfected souls. They've given a path out of the forest of illusion into the spiritual world. And the markers along the path, they show us. Some fixed vows help us get to the goal. Okay, I'll take those fixed vows. The vow is not the essence. The chanting is the essence.
What is not significant about it?
Huh?
What is not significant about 16?
The 16. When we chant, yes, here's what one of our acharyas, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, said. Generally, chanting is done with an increase of increments of four, because in these four rounds, in the chanting of 16 rounds, there's 25,000 names. In the chanting of 64 rounds, there's 100,000 names. In the chanting of, like Haridas Thakur, he would chant every day 300,000 names. So guess us one quarter of the way there, to 100,000 names. And it's the significance of 16 is when Prabhupada came to America, when it came to numerical strength, he initially wanted to see the devotees, his followers, his students, chanting 64 rounds. He saw the lifestyle they live, they can't do that, they're too active. There was 32 rounds. He went down from 64 to 32. And he saw it was very difficult for them to chant 32 rounds. But he said 16 minimum. So the significance of the 16 is, and one of the significances is the order of the acharya. The minimum for initiation purposes should be 16. Upananda, just lean one way or the other, but you keep going back and forth, thank you. So, to follow the order of the spiritual master, we maintain that minimum. If somebody else is just beginning, we don't say, okay, here's some beads, chant 16 rounds. We just take the holy name and whatever time you can do. Take 10 minutes in the morning, 20 minutes in the morning, whatever you can do. Do that. Do something steadily every day. And when there's a desire, is there some fixed number? Generally, the encouragement that I give is just take a number that you can do every day. And do it every day. And when you feel you can make an increase. And then up to 16, what's the magic number 16? Because that's the instruction that Prabhupada gave. It's one quarter of the way there to 100,000 names a day. It's numerical strength. We have our japa retreats sometimes. It's an increasing phenomena in North America. So we have our 64 round day. So we can build up to, have a really quality experience of chanting 100,000 names of Krishna in one day. So, what's the significance of 64? It's 100,000 names for Krishna. It's in one sense you could say that's arbitrary, but in the other sense it's numerical strength. And Prabhupada gave emphasis to this numerical strength, as did our acharyas. Because otherwise it's, you know, according to which way the wind is blowing. Today I feel like this. The next day I feel like this. And then according to whatever, however we feel, that's what we do. But that's not the platform of the soul. The platform of the soul is steady. Okay, so I'm not pushed and pulled by the moods of the day, how I feel and which way the wind is blowing. I'm going to tell there's something fixed every day to help us get to the goal, to Krishna, to attraction, spontaneous attraction for Krishna. We're following our acharyas in this way. And that's significant. When you're feeling connected to the acharyas, you'll understand how significant that is. The process, the chanting of God's holy name is beneficial, even if someone doesn't even know what it is. But the benefit increases as much as we can understand we're getting this connection with Krishna through this wonderful unbroken line of disciplic succession. I want that. I want the maximum mercy of Krishna, which comes through his disciplic succession. So that feeling connection and feeling surcharged by the example and the teachings of our previous perfected souls, that's very significant. I want that. Anything from the ladies' side? Okay. I think we'll end. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.